This is the Tan and J-Man Show. I should just say the J-Man Show because Tanner is currently out with some technical difficulties. His internet is not working, and it looks like mine is in and out as well. So it'll be interesting to see if this actually makes it out. But this could be the worst show you ever hear in your entire life. So I apologize for that. I do have some birdie bogey for Tanner once he gets on, if he ever gets on, because this just might be an hour of J-Man ramblings. So bear with me. But over the last 15 D1 seasons, Division I seasons, I want Tanner or whoever wants to comment to name the players with the top three most points in March. I don't know if that just means the month of March. I assume it just means the month of March. However, all three of these guys made deep tournament runs, very well-known players. So the top three most points scored in March over the past 15 Division I basketball seasons. Again, three very well-known players. And actually, two of them did it the same year. The top two guys, and there's one guy that did it more recently. But Birdie or Bogey is brought to you by Arlington Public House. Arlington Public House is upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. They have their new summer menu out, which is sticky ribs. Get ready to dive into a mountain of St. Louis-style pork ribs, tenderly smoked and drenched in our signature Asian sticky sauce. Get your hands dirty and pair it with a side of crispy beer-battered fries. Let the feast begin. They also have fried mac and cheeseburger, two juicy smash patties snuggled between gooey American cheese slices lounging on a crispy bacon mattress. I love the wording there. Crowned with golden fried mac and cheese nuggets all nestled in a pretzel bun kingdom. That is right up my alley. They also have rattlesnake bites, a delicious fusion of Monterey Jack cheese and jalapenos, resembling jalapeno poppers, and mozzarella sticks served with dill ranch. Each bite offers a crunchy texture, followed by a creamy, spicy blend of flavors. Dipping in dill ranch adds a tangy contrast. And then they also have a strawberry balsamic salmon, 8-ounce sockeye salmon with strawberry basil salsa, balsamic reduction, grilled asparagus, and rosemary potatoes. The dish featured vibrant colors, enticing aroma, in a harmonious balance of flavors crafted to delight the senses and celebrate culinary art. So that just gives you a glimpse into their summer menu. Whoever wrote those descriptions deserves a raise, because that was it painted a picture in my mind of what we could expect on their summer menu. But Monday is pizza night. I know they have dill pickle margarita. See if I can pull it up here real quick. Dill pickle supreme, cheese, pepperoni, and margarita pizza. All at Arlington Public House on Monday nights. So that is Birdie or Bogey. Tanner says that he'll be out for a while because it sounds like Comcast has an internet issue. But I'm going to tell him that I'm going to try to do this one by myself because he's done it by himself at least once. We will see how this goes. The NBA draft was held last Thursday night, Wednesday night, and then into Thursday, of course. And as Tanner and I talked about, it was probably the least hyped draft we can remember. And that had a lot to do with just very little star power, if you will. I know we had Bronny James, who I'll talk about here in a little bit. But we had Zachary Rissachar. From France, two Frenchmen went in the top two. From France going to the Atlanta Hawks. He's long. He's 6'9", 195 pounds. In a typical draft, I think you would have probably seen him in the top 10, probably not number one overall. He did not shoot the ball very well last year, it sounds like, in his professional league over there. But obviously teams draft for a potential now. And honestly, age factors into this as well. We've seen so many guys that are, 18, 19 years old that didn't put up the kind of production that a 23, 24, 25-year-old put up in college. And I know 25-year-old in college, we've seen that more and more. And teams bet on projection more than they do, you know, substance where they're playing. I mean, we see guys averaging 4 points a game in the Australian League, but they check off a lot of boxes athletically and size and all that, and they're young, that those guys are taken in the first round, where you see it got really good players go in the second round that have played 3 to 4 years in college, which it makes no sense to me, because you can find those guys, you know, anywhere in the draft. You get them late. You even get them undrafted free agent. But guys that just put up production, for some reason, production in college has just been an afterthought when it comes to NBA draft process. And we've seen guys get fired over this too, because we see guys, you know, they get to the league, it's 3 or 4 years before they're actually ready, and then they're already phased out of the league because they didn't produce right away. And that's just something that I don't know how they fix that in the NBA. I know guys love the projection of some of these guys. It just rubs me wrong. And maybe that's just because I'm such a big college basketball fan, and we see guys like, for my fandom, Illinois fandom, Io DeSumo put up arguably the best stat line of any forward or guard since ever Evan Turner. He was the first player in the Big Ten since at least Evan Turner to put up, you know, 27-6 in a season. And he falls in the second round because he didn't check off those boxes. He wasn't a great athlete. They had questions about his shooting and all of that. And here he is, you know, guys drafted ahead of them. I hear some rustling around, and I see Tanner. Can you hear me, Tanner?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Are you on your phone?
I am.
Well, thanks. Thanks for joining me. You know, 7 minutes in, I kept looking at the clock. Like, man, we're only 7 minutes in. Also, we're half hour in. But I was just talking about the NBA draft a little bit, and how, and we talked about it a little bit last week, how guys in the NBA draft for, as Tanner's screen goes black, draft for projection more than they do production out of the college game. It just kind of makes me mad these days.
Yeah, no, I've tried to connect to these headphones. I don't think it's going to work. I mean, I can hear you through my phone, but this audio is going to be awful for anybody listening to this on post, so I feel bad. But yeah, the NBA draft, this is the most of the NBA draft I've watched in years. It's nothing compared to the NFL draft. Yeah. Presentation is different. I do like that the picks are, there's less duration in between picks. But yeah, like you said, it's also hard when you don't know these foreign players that are getting drafted. And when these teams are drafting off potential instead of college production, instead of college results, I'll say. It is frustrating.
Yeah, once you got on, I was talking about just my fandom and like seeing guys like Io DeSumo had one of the best years statistically the Big Ten has seen from like a guard since Evan Turner. And he had guys drafted before him that averaged, you know, 7 points a game at Kentucky. And he falls to the second round because he didn't check off those boxes athletically, and they had questions about his shooting. And now you see those guys ahead of them that are no longer in the league, when Io is getting a second contract now, and he averaged, you know, 12 points a game, is a really good role player, and he took over kind of more of a starting role towards the end of the year with the Bulls. And I feel like the NBA, you know, decision makers, general managers, all of that, just overthink it. And they want these guys to check off the, okay, he's got this wingspan, and he's got this, you know, he's got this vertical jump, and he's got, you know, all of this stuff. Whenever, hey, can this guy play basketball well?
Right.
And that's kind of a thing that we just see in the NBA these days.
No, absolutely. It's a whole different league perspective than the other leagues. Well, maybe not baseball. Baseball's in its own category. So I guess I'm just comparing it to the NFL. And like, you know, a lot of people were asking me after the draft when Zach Edey went ninth to Memphis, is that a good fit? Is that a good fit? I'm like, it's hard to tell, but I don't know how much that matters in the NBA as it does in the NFL.
Right.
You know, if in the NFL, a team's not going to take a quarterback unless it's the perfect fit for their offense. Yeah. NBA, I think some teams draft best available, best potential, like you were saying, and then they just figure out from there. Because I think the Grizzlies actually wanted Kleenan probably first, but couldn't draft up to get him. And then they took the best consolation prize they could find, which was Zach Edey. That's just my theory. I don't know. I don't have any inside information. I do think if the Grizzlies didn't take him, I think the Jazz were going to take him at 10. Mm. I do know he worked out for the Jazz. So,
yeah, it is nice to see, you know, the kind of older school big men like a Klingon, a guy that's not jacking up threes. You know, he's rebounding and blocking shots. Zach Edey, of course, you can't teach 7'4".
Right.
And with a 7'11 wingspan, but still a more traditional big from back in the day get drafted in the top, you know, 10, because it hasn't happened in probably 7-8 years.
No.
And even a guy like Khalil Ware a little bit, I know he can shoot the three ball. It's not a huge part of his game, but he went in the top 15.
Right.
So it made my heart warm to see maybe the NBA is going back to that a little bit.
Well, I think they all three benefited from a weak draft as well, but sure. Hey, it is what it is. I mean, how often do we see the number one overall pick? It'd be said that he might not be the best player in the draft, that he went number one.
Yeah.
But he's the best fit for the Hawks. So, I don't know. I did stop kind of watching midway through the first round. Saw Terrence Shannon Jr., of course, land in Minnesota. Then round one, I got to say, I did not watch any of round two. I still think it's the dumbest thing. No, they put it on the second day at 4 o'clock, nonetheless.
Yeah.
But
I can't imagine ratings were all that great either. I know people were tuning in to see where Bronny went, I'm sure. But yeah, I didn't care about the second round. Once Shannon got drafted, I knew there was no Illinois players that were gonna get drafted. So there was really no point to tune in at all. Shannon was Illinois' first round pick since Myers Leonard.
Wow, that would be a good trivia question.
Which says something about those John Gross years. and again, a guy like Io probably should have been a first rounder. He wasn't, obviously. But he was an NBA player. But
what numbers Shannon going to wear for the Timberwolves, do you know?
I haven't seen anything. Okay. I haven't really followed it all that closely. I think it's a good fit for him because they're obviously a really good defensive team already. I mean, we saw what they did to Denver. Mm-hmm. And then you add a guy like a Terrence Shannon who's, you know, 6'6", 220 pounds and one of the better defenders in college basketball last year. With his length and athleticism, I think he'll be a good kind of role player to start. So I thought it was a good fit for him. Same with Zach Edey, because just 2 years ago, wasn't Memphis a top two seed in the West? They were really good. And then Ja Morant, of course, had the suspension. They've had some injury issues.
Right.
But, I mean, Edey, obviously, he's a plug-and-play guy. You can plug him in right away, and he should be able to produce and be a really good fit for Memphis. I know a lot of Memphis fans were mad they didn't take Dalton Knecht.
Tennessee fans, which
is crazy because Knecht played at Tennessee 1 year. He was at, you know, where was he? Like Wyoming or Montana or something like that.
Northern Colorado.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And he's not from Tennessee or anything. And for some reason, they had this loyalty towards the guy.
I mean, he was pretty darn good for him. Did get into the Elite Eight. So
he was.
You know.
But they're almost like, I can't believe Memphis didn't draft the Tennessee guy. Why does that matter?
And when it comes to professional sports, it doesn't matter if it's NFL or NBA. They don't care about the local college. They're trying to, you know, the GMs are trying to keep their jobs and everything. I mean, I've been on that side, like a football, like a late round of a draft, like getting mad that the Colts don't take a flyer on like a Purdue guy. But then do they care? No, they don't care.
They're going to take the best
person for their franchise. So it is.
Plus, funny. I mean, those guys probably didn't even go to Tennessee or Purdue. So why would they care less about somebody that of a school they didn't go to?
Some of the most loyal fans are that way. But.
That is true. And if you're in like the Bulls position where you're, you know, picking in the second round, it's like probably should it was nice that the Bulls took Io a few years ago. Cause for one, he was probably best player available at the time anyway. But Reinsdorf needs as many PR wins as he could possibly get. He's a Chicago kid, all of that. And I know some people were mad that Bulls didn't take Shannon, I think 12th overall, which would have been a major reach. And they ended up with a guy that could have gone in the top five for the Bulls, who was also a Chicagoland kid, Matez Buzelis. But Yeah, what do you think about Bronny?
I think it's a joke.
I do too.
Such a joke. Yeah. I feel bad for guys like, and I'm just throwing it out there because he's the one that pops in my head. I know he wasn't going to get drafted anyways, but like Lance Jones, who's a better basketball player than Bronny James.
Or Marcus Domas.
Marcus Domas, yeah, perfect example. I feel bad for those guys who are literally better basketball players than him. Not saying that Bronny won't eventually be good or no, actually, I don't think he's ever going to be a good pro. I think he could have blossomed into a decent college player given time, but everything had to be sped up because daddy wants to play with his son.
Yeah.
And it's just the big old power move from LeBron. I think it would have been hilarious if Boston or somebody would have taken him at like a 53 and held him hostage and ransom. But the writing was on the wall for him to go to LA. Now it'll be interesting. Assuming he struggles in summer league and workouts and whatnot, if LeBron lobbies for him to be on the main roster or down in the G League.
The crazy thing is the Lakers aren't good enough to be doing this.
No, they're not.
A 55th overall pick the last 10 years, I don't think there's really been any established NBA players. But if like Bronny he's makes
one more 55.
Was he?
Okay. Yeah, he had a double-digit year career. But
I saw a list of the past 10. I don't think he would have gone in the
past 10. No, he would have been down in 2011 draft.
So. Yeah. But yeah, like the last 10, it was brutal how few NBA minutes were even there. Right. And I mean, taking Bronny's not that big of a deal. If he's on the team, though, and not in the G League, they're not good enough to have a guy like that just because his daddy is. I mean, with a now 39-year-old, he'll be 40 in November, LeBron. You have an Anthony Davis who has about 12 knee injuries a year. Yeah. They haven't done anything in free agency yet or trades or anything like that. This is a team that the past couple years
been never coached.
Yeah, exactly. He's coached fourth grade. He was a volunteer fourth grade coach in Brooklyn last year. It's a team the past couple years with all these stars, if you want to call it that, have been fighting for a play-in game to get an 8 seed. They're not good enough.
And I don't think they would have won a title in the 2020 season if it wasn't for the bubble.
Yeah, it was a shame.
I mean, we won't know, but yeah, if there was actual, playoff environment, crowds and everything, I don't think they would have won that title.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this question the other day. Who would you compare the Lakers to for every other sports? So NFL, MLB, college basketball, college football.
MLB, I could probably compare them to the St. Louis Cardinals.
All right.
Won a bunch of titles, but they won in 2020. I'll give the Lakers that. But besides that, they hadn't really done anything since like the late 2000s.
I was going to throw my Yankees in there.
The Yankees are probably a better one. I always forget the Yankees haven't won one since when, 2009?
2009, haven't made it since 2009.
Yeah. Cardinals haven't won one since 2011 and haven't been there since 2013. Right. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you could throw the Yankees
in there. I guess Yankees are the bigger brand, more payroll.
That's a much better. But Yankees are really good now, and the Cardinals are mediocre.
I mean, in the NFL, the easy comparison is the Cowboys. But let's throw them aside and then try to pick somebody else.
49ers?
At least they're close.
Yeah. Niners haven't won one since – I mean, I think the Cowboys have won more recently than the Niners have, haven't they? They've been there a couple times.
You're right. Yeah, at least they get there. I mean, Cowboys can't even win a playoff game.
Yeah, that's a good point. College basketball, of course, you can kind of maybe throw Indiana in there, but it's been 40 years now. We got to stop talking about Indiana like they're.
Yeah, I'm to the point like if somebody was alive then when they won the fifth one, okay, they can talk about it. But if they're not, they weren't alive for it. Like we don't, you and I don't talk about our team's accomplishments before we were born or even started watching.
Those 1908 Cubs, man, they were really good. I don't talk about the 72 Dolphins ever.
No.
I couldn't care less.
That, he's more than justified to.
Yeah.
But
and he was 12 or 11, so he wasn't even.
But he remembers them. He was justified to. But, that cracks me up. I think, Indiana's a good one. Some other teams. UCLA.
That's a good one.
I mean, they did make the finals. You already know they had that stretch with Holland where they made a couple Final Fours and had a championship appearance, but they haven't done much. They don't have the fan, fan backing, though, that these other organizations do.
Syracuse? I mean, Syracuse only won one, I guess, but.
How about Kentucky?
Honestly, Kentucky's probably the good one. I mean, they've only won, one this century?
Yeah, Cal only won one.
Yeah,
nobody does less with more talent than John Calipari.
Yeah, and their fan base is all over too. So that's a good one.
The Duke's won a good number. North Carolina's won a good number, of course,
and recently too.
Kansas.
What about college football?
Nebraska.
Florida.
Florida more recently had it because Nebraska hadn't done anything since like
a long time.
Early 2000s when they lost to Miami Crash, but Florida's a good one.
Miami, Florida.
Miami, Florida. Yeah. Notre Dame's had a lot of success, but if you're going to talk titles, you could throw them in there.
Could also throw them in there with Indiana, too. It's been so long.
Yeah, Penn State is kind of one I'd almost throw in there. They can't win the big game. They're always hyped up. Well, Michigan broke that last year. Ohio State's been good. Yeah, Miami, Florida's a good one. I kind of like that one.
Yeah, they won a bunch in like the 80s, 90s, and then early 2000s. But, and of course, the Lakers won in 0. They won in 2010, right? And 2009.
Yeah,
back 2020. But
maybe Texas? I know they made the playoff. I know they just made the playoff, but.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, you can kind of compare that to the 2020 Lakers a little bit.
Yeah.
Texas is a good one, though, because they won about the same year the Lakers won.
Yep.
Back in 2010, 2011, something like that for Texas.
Yep.
So,
but
yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking about that the other day because I think it's somebody on Twitter doing it for college football. Tennessee for college football.
Yeah. Tennessee. yeah.
I get it. I know it's extremely hard in the SEC. Don't get me wrong, but.
Well, they act like they should be winning it every year, and they just never do.
Yeah, their baseball team won it all, so they got that going for them.
They did, and yeah, and we'll have to hear about that too, even though people probably didn't care about the baseball team until May of this past year. So
I never knew how obnoxious that fan base was until the Music City Bowl in 2021.
Yeah. now you guys have this weird rivalry because it seems like you guys play each other every year in either basketball and then, of course, the one year in football.
I hate it. But Purdue comes out on top more
times. They do. They do.
But I do hate it.
Did you hear my birdie bogey?
I did not. I'm sorry. I was trying to mess with hotspot all bunch of stuff. And I'm like, I'll try to connect with that Wi-Fi on my phone. And that worked.
Over the past 15 seasons, can you name the players with the top three most points in the month of March for college basketball? All three of these guys had long tournament runs, obviously. Right. Two of these three did it the same year, and then one more recently than that. But
so 15 years.
Most points in March. The top three guys. Two for a par. Three for a birdie. It's a tough one.
Back to 2009.
2009. Yep. That would be, last 15 years. Okay. So I already did the read and everything, and I went through their summer menu and all the description of the food. It was pretty.
Their summer menu looks awesome.
It looks really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm starving. I have not ate dinner yet tonight. So I'm at a steak. So, but I do have. Pick six tonight. Let me see if I can pull up the banner on my phone. Look at that. So today is Bobby Bonilla Day.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody that doesn't celebrate, it's one of the worst contracts in sports history for the team that gave it, for the Mets. Great for him. Whereas he's getting paid, what is it, $1.32 million every year through 2029?
Yeah.
The dude stopped playing in the early 2000s.
Yeah,
I still don't understand how or why that contract happened.
So a lot of these players get it backdated or not backdated.
Like Ohtani is, right?
Yeah, Ohtani did it. What the heck is the term? I literally had it in my brain like a second ago. Chris Davis, Crush Davis. You remember him?
He was one of the ones on my list.
Yeah. Over the next 3 years, he's making $9 million. Then 3 years after that, it's like four. And then up until like almost he's 70, he's getting paid something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I picked out six contracts that are arguably six of the worst sports contracts in history across NBA, MLB, and NFL. One of them is Crash Davis, Chris Davis of the Orioles.
He was ridiculous for like a 2 or 3 year stretch, hitting 50 bombs, and then he just couldn't make contact after that. Makes you wonder about steroids, honestly. I know guys weren't taking steroids in the mid 2010s, but his decline was pretty crazy. He started a year where he was 0-59. I think it was the longest streak to start a season non pitcher wise. And yeah, but again, he's getting paid a lot of money to not play the next couple of years. 10 years, I think he's getting paid at least.
Another baseball one I have, Jacoby Ellsbury with the Yankees.
Obi-Wan Jacoby. That was – he had a really good – he had one really, really good year with the Red Sox. Hit like 32 homers. Went to the Yankees. They're like, that's the next Johnny Damon, you know, going from Red Sox to Yankees. And couldn't stay healthy. He was pretty good when he was healthy.
Yeah.
But that was the issue. He just never was. But in his day, he was a good leadoff guy. Fast. Had a little bit of pop. But, that was a bad deal.
This one on the Boston side, Carl Crawford.
Oh, man, I forgot about CC. He was fun to watch for really bad Rays teams. And then they got good when he was there. Red Sox gave him a ton of money. Again, another guy that couldn't stay healthy. You see these fast guys just not be able to stay healthy. Then they traded him to L.A. where he didn't do a whole lot there. Now his son was a first-round pick of the Phillies 2 years ago. Yeah, his son. And so he's making his way up the Phillies ladder. But, Carl was really good with the Rays. I mean, 50 steals. He can be a leadoff guy. He was a good player, but probably not – the kind of player you want to give $150 million to like the Red Sox did.
NBA, you could pick a lot of them over the years. This one kind of stuck out to me. It was an 08, so you got to take that for what's worth. Because the money back then, but what I'm going to say now is just average money. The average
crazy.
Yeah. But it was a six-year, $111 million deal at the time. The Wizards granting that to Gilbert Arenas.
Yeah, Gilbert was a suit. Back when they gave him the money, it was very warranted to give him the money because he was very, very good player on some good Wizards teams. And the Wizards are never good.
Nope.
I mean, I think he had him in the top three in the East at that point. His career fizzled quickly. And maybe it was because he got the money. I know he had some injury issues too, but or maybe it was his run-in with Javaris Crittenden in the locker room.
I'm pretty sure that was more maybe. Probably the reason. But
Gunn was fired.
Yeah.
Gilbert's still kind of hanging around a little bit. I see him on – he has some podcast appearances, and he has his own. So.
Yeah. Another NBA one that was stuck out, and I forgot about – Joakim Noah won the Knicks.
How much did they give him?
He gave him a four-year, $56 million deal when he was coming off a year he played zero games for the Bulls due to injury. And he ended up playing, I think, 51 games total for that contract.
Yeah, four years for $56 million is like you're going right for a backup point guard now in the NBA.
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
Stupid.
The money.
After not playing games, I think the Knicks have kind of settled into – being a pretty good organization now that they hired Tibbs and all of that. And, you know, they're making some pretty shrewd moves. But back then they were just throwing crap at a wall and hoping it stuck and signing Noah. And I know he won a defensive player of the year. He was a good player with the Bulls, but he was injured, as you said, when he signed that deal. And a guy like Noah, he's never going to age well in the NBA because, you know, all of his, kind of skill came from his athleticism and grit and all of that. When you have that sort of stuff, you're going to get injured and your athleticism is going to fail you a little bit. And I think the last year of his deal, he averaged like 2 points and 4 rebounds a game. He did nothing, but he got paid and he hated the city of Cleveland. I do remember his quote on
yes.
that. No one goes to Cleveland for vacation.
Yep. Yeah, that is a classic line. It's crazy that one of his Florida teammates, Al Horford, is still contributing to a championship team.
Noah was by far the most famous, and a lot of that had to do with, you know, his hair and his antics and all of that.
And his father.
And who his dad was, yeah. But, I mean, Horford's dad was pretty famous himself.
True.
I mean, he was more understated and quiet, but yep. he was the guy that was taken in the top five, you know, and he was more of a traditional big, and now the past 5-6 years, he's a pick and pop big. He's a stretch the floor kind of guy.
Yep.
He's really evolved his game, and that's why he's hung around as long as he has.
Yep. And one more NFL, another league I could have picked a lot, but I picked one close to my heart, Brock Osweiler with the Texans.
Good old Brock.
$72 million.
Close to both of our hearts. And honestly, if Brock had his season with Denver, that he had in today, he would probably gotten $150 million.
You're right.
I mean, you look at Daniel Jones's contract for one.
You're 100% correct.
But yeah, Brock had a nice stretch with Denver. And as you have always said, if he would have just stayed with Denver, we think his career would have been a lot better.
Yeah, I think he at least would have hung around there for another 4 years or so, probably. Yeah.
He started in Houston for what, like 8 games before they benched him? It didn't take very long.
Guaranteed. Yeah. All guaranteed.
Yeah, man. And then he went to Miami and was a backup for a while.
You got to remember, they shipped him to Cleveland.
That's right.
Cleveland took on the deal. Then they cut him. Then he had another stint in Denver for a year when they were just recycling quarterbacks that year. Then he went to Miami.
Okay. I do not remember that. I think he backed up Jay Cutler. No, it was the Tannehill. Yeah, I think it was 2018. Tannehill was still there, but Tannehill got hurt. I forget what he did, but I had to watch Brock Osweiler play live against the Detroit Lions, and they got beat pretty handily.
I was probably at his most famous career start when the Broncos took down the Patriots.
Is that CJ Anderson?
Yep. And then I was at another one that might have been one of his other better games. It was an awful Bronco team against awful Colt team, Thursday Night Football in Lucas Oil. And
I remember that game.
Got knocked out in the first quarter. Osweiler came and lit the Colts up.
Yeah, I remember that one too.
That was an awful
good game. Good old Brock.
Yep.
I've seen him somewhere. Is he doing like TV now?
Yeah, he does ESPN. He gets one of the lower tier games, so he's called a couple Purdue games last year. but they try to keep him at what was Pac-12. We'll pour one out for the Pac-12 because it's
officially done today.
Yeah. And the Big Ten is officially at 18 schools now, so which is still so weird to say out loud. But he's hanging around there. He does commentary for college football. So
I also watched Brock Osweiler play live in college. Now that I remember, for Arizona State. That. Yeah, Illinois beat Arizona State. Brock Osweiler and Vontaze Burfict.
You saw some interesting college quarterbacks in your days against the Illini. Mitch Trubisky, right?
Yeah, I saw Mitch Trubisky, his second career start, lit him up. Connor Cook, his, I think, second or third career start with Michigan State, and I think he went like 19 to 20. Like, Illinois couldn't get a stop. Then I saw Terrell Pryor and Braxton Miller. And for some reason, we always chose to watch him get murdered by Ohio State. JT Barrett. We saw. So I haven't been to an Illinois football game in Champaign since the Trubisky game in 2016.
Okay.
But, saw some interesting ones. Carlos Hyde ran for 5 touchdowns against them. I will never forget that one. Illinois was getting whooped, and then they cut it to 12. They get the ball back, and instead of going for it, I think it was like 4th and 14 at their own, like 12, with 4 minutes left. good old Timmy Beckman decided to punt because, you know, you thought, hey, maybe if we only lose by 12, people will get off my back. Well, I said, screw it, we're leaving. And as we're walking out of the stadium, we hear an absolute roar. Carlos Hyde ran for a 50-yard touchdown. By the time we got to our car, we heard another roar. Carlos Hyde had run for another 50-yard touchdown. They end up losing like 60 to 34 instead of 46 to 34. Watching Illinois play really good football teams never went well ever. And even the bad teams. I mean, we saw them lose to that Purdue team went 6-6, didn't they, in 2012?
Yeah, well, after they lost the bowl game, it was 6-7. But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they were okay. But at the time, I think it was 3-6 against 2-8 or something like that.
It was second to last game of the year.
Okay. So they were 4-6.
Purdue had just won at Iowa to win their fourth game.
That's right.
And yeah, that was a horrible offensive game.
Was Marv the quarterback?
Yeah, put him in the last three games, and if a combination of, because he was playing with no ACL, so a combination of him taking over and Gary Nord, the offensive coordinator, hurrying himself in the weight room, contributed to Purdue making a bowl game. Because if those two things didn't happen, Purdue wasn't winning probably any of those remaining games.
Yeah, you hated many Purdue offensive coordinators back during that time.
You know, as bad as Nord was, you know, Nord just loved the bubble screen. I didn't know what was coming next with good old John Shoup under the
hazel. John Shoup, that's who was.
Wow.
And somehow he failed upwards and became the Bears offensive coordinator at one point, or were the Purdue job.
Bears coordinator prior. Okay. I remember when Purdue hired him, and the Bear fans on the message boards, Bears/Purdue fans on the message boards, like, oh my God, what are we doing? Like, hey, he can't be that bad. He coaches pros. Huh?
He's pretty bad.
But we got to find you a college football team this year.
Yeah.
And J-Man Show Nation's going to have to find you one.
My Illinois fandom is for football has, with conference realignment, transfer portal, all that, I don't think Illinois can hang, honestly. And
there's a lot of Big Ten teams that can't hang anymore.
I just can't. I've always kind of been a fair-weather Illinois football fan. I had a decent run where I was, you know, a diehard from, like, I would say 2010 through, like, 2018. And then after that, it's just like, okay. And then they had the good year 2 years ago, and I kind of got into them again. So maybe if they're good this year, maybe I'll jump back in. But we'll see.
Maybe. If not, Tanner J. Manchester Nation's got to pick a new team for it. I know you're going to have some restrictions. There's no Purdue, no Indiana, no Notre Dame.
No other Big Ten schools.
Yeah.
Have to be Power Four and have to have won a national title within the last 3 years. So I'm thinking Georgia. Thinking Georgia.
pretty safe.
Not Michigan,
pretty safe bet there. But that long random edition of the Pick Six segment is brought to you by Performer Prints You Promo Group. I do not have the read in front of me. You think I've been doing this for many years? I would have memorized it, but I haven't. But if you need any promotional products or a commercial print done, they are the group to go with. You can contact Barbara Vans Weinsberg. And she'll get you set up, and I will link all that information in the website description, because I don't have it in front of me, and I don't have that good of memory. So,
do you want to get educated?
Always.
On this day in 1859, the first intercollegiate baseball game was played as Amherst beat Williams 66-32 in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
1859.
Yeah.
66-32. Wonder how long that game took. My goodness.
Wonder what the rules were.
Yeah, that's true.
On this day in 1904, the third modern summer Olympic Games were held in the U.S. Can you tell me where it was held? It was the first one held in the U.S.
Was it Los Angeles?
No. For some reason, they decided to have it in St. Louis, Missouri.
I knew I've seen that before. Yeah, darn it.
They would definitely not choose St. Louis these days.
They're going to LA in 2028.
They are, and I saw that their softball facility is not up to like snuff.
Code.
So
no, code.
The softball is going to be held in Oklahoma City, or because they have like a state of the art like softball facility. I think that might be where like the I don't know. I don't want to say something I don't know.
I wonder how many times the U.S. was hosted the Olympics. I know Atlanta in 96.
Yeah.
I know L.A.'s had it before.
Mm-hmm. Didn't we have a winter one here, too?
Salt Lake City in 02.
Okay. Yeah. On this day in 1917, in contravention of state law, the Dodgers play their first Sunday Major League Baseball game in Brooklyn. Their owner and manager was arrested, but escaped with a fine. So he couldn't play on Sundays back in the day.
BYU still doesn't.
Yeah. On this day in 1931, Cleveland Municipal Stadium opened. Where the Indians and Browns played. 78,189 was the capacity. They tore that thing down in 96.
I wonder if Bionic State was wrong last week because I mentioned something about that last week.
I do remember you saying something about that last week.
One of the Cleveland stadiums where the Browns and Indians played.
On this day in 1941, Joe DiMaggio tied Willie Keeler's 44-game MLB hit streak, obviously on his way to 56.
I wonder if he was dating Marilyn Monroe then. Or was that later on? Probably later on.
41? Yeah, probably later. I think that would have been later on.
Yeah. Good ball player.
On this day in... A lot of baseball. There's some Wimbledon in here. Bu. 1968, Cardinals pitcher Bob Gibson's streak of 47 and two-thirds scoreless innings ends on a wild pitch.
Oh, that's rough.
He was good. Yeah, he was good. On this day in 1982, Cal Ripken Jr. made his first of his record 2,216 consecutive starts as shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles.
That's a lot of starts. And then he went to third. Well, no, he went to third, then shortstop. Duh. Never mind.
Yeah. On this day in 2011, the NBA owners begin the second player lockout in 12 years, which shortened the season by 16 games. I do remember that. I think they started Christmas Day 2011.
I think they should do that every year.
I do, too. On this day in 2018, NBA superstar LeBron James agreed to a four-year, $154 million deal with the Lakers. That's nothing. Just 6 years later. Like, that is like a middling contract again. I mean, Jason Tatum signed a $300+ million deal. Cade Cunningham, who's terrible for the Detroit Pistons, signed a $220 million deal.
Just ridiculous the money that's getting thrown around the NBA right now.
That is going to do it for your education.
And Cal did go from shortstop to third. I was right.
Did he? I mean, when you're younger, you have the range for short.
That was right. It was at the All-Star game when they let him go back to short.
Yeah, A-Rod went and played third. And
then, little did we know A-Rod was going to be the third baseman of the Yankees. So.
Yeah.
That's right. And that is this week's On This Day segment, which is brought to you by Mooney Woodcrafts. Once again, I don't have the darn read in front of me, but Mooney Woodcrafts is a custom-based woodcraft shop with based out of Texas, but with Indiana grassroots. They provide 100% hand-cut custom designs to fit your needs, and they fit in any garage, office, home office, or a man cave. You can see some of their recently completed projects by visiting them on Instagram and on Facebook at Mooney Woodcrafts is their handle on there. And if you tell them the Tan and J-Man show sent you, you get 15% off your first sign order. So get your wooden sign order in. It's July now. It's time to start thinking Christmas. You know, Christmas in July.
Yeah. 4th of July is Thursday, and so hope everyone has a happy and healthy 4th of July, except one guy. Have you seen Jose Canseco on Twitter? Every Saturday or every holiday, he goes, "Happy Saturday to everyone except one guy." And
no, I didn't even know Jose was on social media, to be honest.
We all know he's talking about Alex Rodriguez. That's the funny part. He's the one guy that he does it. It's so funny. He's even posted a picture of him. Happy Memorial Day to everyone except one guy.
They still got that beef going on years later.
Yeah. Anything else? Base, basketball, football?
No, you know, we always talk about football not having an offseason NFL, but right now it's kind of that dead period. But later this month, camp start.
Well, we got about 3 to 4 weeks. I think a month from today, the Bears and whoever, Giants, I think, play in the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah. Camp start.
College football 3 weeks, camp, right?
We'll be going in August. We got College Football 25 for the video game systems coming out on the 19th. So that gets the football gears rolling.
Yeah, there hasn't been a whole lot of football news here recently, has there? No. Which is probably good for the NFL because usually if stuff's come out in June and July, it's somebody getting arrested or somebody doing something stupid.
So. Right. I am looking forward to it. I know you shared this with our group text. You said pouring out for the Big Ten 14 team map of the yeah. commercial. It'll be interesting to see if they redo it with 18 teams or if they just come up with something else. You almost just have to come up with something else, I think. But
yeah, I mean, that commercial has been on for probably 10 years now.
Oh, yeah.
It's been the staple of the Big yep. Ten Network, and yep. I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Staple of the Big Ten Network, along with Rotel and Barbasol.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly it. Can almost say those commercials word for word.
Oh, the band that Jim Jackson one was cringe worthy.
Yeah, it was. I guess it's time to talk some baseball.
Yes, it is, Josh. Yes, it is.
I'm trying to think what I said last week. Cubs could be on like an 11 game losing streak by the 4th of July. It's not going to happen. You said it wouldn't happen and it didn't happen. But still,
I got Cubs went, covered there with the banner. I got you covered.
Cubs Firejet. Hashtag Firejet. Cubs went a very tough road trip. I'll give them that. In San Francisco, where they never play well, in Milwaukee, where they never play well, they went 2-5. And honestly, they should have lost all seven. It took an Ian Happ two-run homer in the 10th inning on Thursday to avoid a four-game sweep in San Francisco. Took a two-run homer in the top of the – I think it was the top of the ninth. Top of the eighth or top of the ninth on Saturday to beat the Milwaukee Brewers. So if it was not for Ian Happ, Cubs have been on a seven-game losing streak with the Phillies coming to town for three this week. But still playing very bad baseball. It's just been depressing. So disappointing, you know. When they hire Craig Counsell – you think, okay, they're going to get better at the fundamental part of the game. Their defense, which was top five in baseball last year, has been terrible. Ian Happ completely misjudged a fly ball yesterday, and it landed on the warning track, which directly led to five runs. He catches that ball. Cubs are down 2-1, two outs. You know, next guy gets a hit, but the next guy makes an out. It would have been out of the inning. Next thing you know, Kyle Hendricks gives up a grand slam, 7-1, game over. I don't know if you saw a video, Justin Steele. He pitched on Saturday and pitched pretty well. His defense let him down, and it was a little run down. I don't know what Nico Horner was doing running the guy so far to third, and then Chris Morel came up 15 feet up the baseline, and they didn't tag the guy out, and what should have been an easy out. Couple runs score, anything. Anyway, coming off the mound, Justin Steele, who's about the only, like, leader, rah-rah guy they have, you could – see him in the dugout. He's going nuts. Wake the expletive up. Wake the expletive up. So a lot of people are like, oh, maybe this is the moment. This is the moment. Cubs end up winning the game. This is the moment things turn around. And then on Sunday, Nico Horner, leadoff homer. All right, they get another hit in the first inning. Things are turning around. After the first inning, the Cubs went 0-26 with two walks. They stayed asleep. There's reports today that they're pretty much telling guys, okay, we're going to start selling. Or I even heard names like guys that are under contract, like Nico Horner as a potential trade candidate. Ian Happ, who has a no trade clause, which was stupid to give a guy like him a no trade clause for one. He's a candidate. Cody Bellinger, of course, is going to be a candidate. Even a guy, Jameson Taillon, who has two more years and $40 million left on his deal. Has been mentioned. So it looks like Cubs are going to try to dump some salary and an incredible loser move for a guy in year four. It's not a rebuild. This is a retool. Yeah, well, I saw people on Twitter. Of course, people are all over Jed. And for some reason, he still has backers. And there's this guy on Twitter that goes, well, if you fire Jed now, they should have fired Theo in 2013. 2013 Theo for one was in year two. There was a plan in place. We knew he was going to tear it down to the studs, build it back up. You had guys coming up like an Anthony Rizzo coming up. They had just drafted Chris Bryant. Javi Baez was in the system. Year four of Theo Epstein, which is what Jed is in now, they won 97 games and went to the NLCS. Year four of Jed, here we are, 39-46. Selling for the fourth straight season and no plan, no superstars in the system. They have good depth in the system, which I'll give him that, but he refuses to trade from that depth to acquire said superstars. Again, this is about five straight weeks. I've said the same crap on this show. It's rough. It is, you know, I was thinking, is this the most depressing Cubs team since I've been watching? I've watched a lot of bad Cubs baseball, let's be honest. 2004, they were a fun team that collapsed at the end. I'll give them – that was bad, but it wasn't – it was depressing at the time, but the whole season wasn't depressing. 2009, they had come off 97 wins. They did get swept by the Dodgers, so left a bad taste in their mouth. Trade for Milton Bradley, which I thought at the time was a great move. He ends up being a cancer. They end up winning 83 games, missing the playoffs. Depressing. The collapse, 2018, they didn't really play that bad. It was more the Brewers played really well. That was depressing, but again, not a whole season of depressing. Same with 2019. They weren't as good as they had been. Not that depressing. 2021, I will admit, was depressing, especially the 14-game losing streak they had that pretty much sealed, you know, Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and all those guys' fates. That was depressing. I'll give them that. From April 30th on to now, I don't remember being in a worse headspace when it comes to the Chicago Cubs. I tune in. I tune in about every single night anymore. If I'm home, I'm watching them, you know, and it's almost like I'm hate watching them at this point. good things happen. I feel nothing. Ian Happ hits the homer, top nine against the Brewers, game lead. Couldn't care less. And that is where a lot of the fan base is out at now.
Which
for a guy like me to be like that when it comes to Chicago Cubs, that's when you know, okay, this isn't working. And it's a dangerous spot to be at.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I don't know if Tom Ricketts cares enough because, again, people are showing up 40,000, 38,000 every single night. His attendance is not changing. So why would he care to put more money into him if he's going to make the same amount of money anyway? So it's been rough. And again, Phillies come to town, best record in the National League. Cubs catch a break this week, though, because Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, JT Realmuto, all on the injured list, will not be playing this week. Cubs don't have to face Aaron Nola or Ranger Suarez. They do have to face Zach Wheeler. So you look at this matchup like, hey, maybe we could catch a break and actually win two. I'm smart enough to know that that's not going to happen. They'll probably get swept. Angels are coming to town, who are bad. But they've been playing a little bit better baseball. Wouldn't be surprised if the Cubs lose 2-3. Then they go on the road. I think they go to Baltimore. That'll just be an absolute slaughter. Baltimore just finished off a month where they hit 60 homers in the month of June. They might double that total in a three-game series against the Chicago Cubs. And then they go to round off the first half of the season heading into the All-Star break with a four-game set, including a doubleheader in St. Louis. They're seven games out. I wouldn't be surprised if they're 15 to 20 games out by the All-Star break. And honestly, at this point, I hope they lose I hope they win less than 70, because I think the only way we'll actually see real change is if they just get embarrassed the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm rooting for now. And it sucks, because this team was supposed to be different. This team was supposed to be a playoff team. You look at the on paper in the division, the Brewers have this like devil magic that they stole from the Cardinals, where the Cardinals on paper have never been all that great. And every year they win 95 games. The Brewers the past 6 years have stolen it. Now they're 16 games over 500 with a middle of the road lineup, middle of the road pitching staff. They just know how to win. And obviously Craig Counsell wasn't the guy that got it done for them.
Right.
And Jed Hoyer gives him a 5-year, $40 million contract, makes him the highest paid manager ever. So things are bad, very bad on the North side.
And you know, it's interesting because in your one of your 24 bold predictions for 2024 was Cubs would finish last.
And maybe, I was mad at them at the time because they hadn't done anything in the offseason, and maybe I should have hung on to that.
Because when then you reverse course,
in our
preseason predictions, and you picked them to, I think, win the division, or if not, at least make the playoffs.
Yeah, So obviously, subconsciously, I knew something.
Yeah, you did.
So they're not fun either. It's not like a fun bad. Like some teams are fun bad, where you got young guys, they're not winning a whole lot of games, but at least you have something to look forward to every night.
Right.
You have a 28-year-old Cody Bellinger who's hit two homers over his last 45 games. You have a Nico Horner who, you know, had a really good year last year. He's leading off where he's hitting 240. Dansby Swanson, 6-year, $166 million deal. He's hitting under 220. You know, yeah, I mean, they're two most exciting players, Michael Bush, who they was their big offseason acquisition offensively besides Cody Bellinger. He's been great for him. I mean, he's a younger guy. He's 26, I think, but he's fine to tune in and watch. Pete Crow Armstrong can't hit, but when he gets on base, he's stealing two bases. One of the best defensive outfielders in the game already. So those are the two guys. But other than that, it's just been just absolutely depressing. That's the only way I can describe it, is they're depressing. And we'll see. Last year, they're around this at the same time. They're this bad last year. I don't think they're 11 and a half out. And they got hot and kept them in it. So we'll see if they have one more run in them. They don't. I'll just say it right now. But elsewhere around baseball, the AL East, Baltimore has finally tied the Yankees up, as the Yankees have not been playing very good the past
couple of weeks. No, they were terrible in New York and Subway Series.
However, Aaron Judge has been his
last
50 games, he is hitting .398 with a .507 on base percentage, a .932 slugging percentage, which is a on base plus slugging of 1.439, which is the highest OPS ever over any 50 game season span by a right-handed hitter ever. So he is one of the best right-handed hitters we've ever seen.
Yeah, what he's doing with runs batted in right now, stupid too.
Yeah, it's absurd what he's doing. I want to talk about the Seattle Mariners real quick, because two weeks ago, they were 10 and a half games up. They have lost 6.5 games off of their AL West lead in the span of 12 days. You know how bad. And they're playing teams like the Marlins, too. That's
the teams they should take care of, yeah.
They're hitting .218 as a team. Their best hitter has an OPS under 700. So they need some bats. And the Cubs have been mentioned as a potential candidate to trade like a Nico Horner or a Bellinger to them. But the Mariners are my American League team, because I don't hate them yet, like I do a lot of these teams. But, the Dodgers are ho-hum. Dodgers fans are mad because they're not, like, incredible. Usually they're 19 games over 500. You have the best hitter in, maybe second best hitter in baseball besides Judge, but Shohei Ohtani has been as advertised while rehabbing Tommy John surgery. He's still hitting ridiculously.
That's pretty stupid.
Cubs rant over. I'm glad. Houston finds themselves one game over 500, 3.5 out.
That's not surprising.
They'll probably end up winning it, honestly. Rangers have to be the most disappointing team in the league. 8 games under 500.
One of those teams where you don't know what's going to happen after you win it all. You know, how do you deal with success?
People have mentioned Arizona as being disappointed. I guess they have. But, I mean, they were an 84-win team that went to the World Series. They were okay last year. They're 2 games under 500 this year. They're not great. They're not, like, a great team to begin with. But, the teams are separating themselves. It'll be fun to watch the AL East battle, because both those teams are really, really good in Baltimore and the New York Yankees. And you have
the rest of the division is kind of disappointing.
Yeah, the Blue Jays especially, 14.5 out, have not gotten good production from Bo Bichette. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. has been on a tear here recently, but they've struggled. They've really struggled hitting for a team that we thought would absolutely mash.
I was talking with a friend of mine last week who's a Rays fan. Yes, you heard that right. He's a Rays fan. He couldn't pinpoint what the heck's wrong with that team this year. So
they've struggled hitting. They've struggled pitching. That's just why they're 42-42. They're just kind of middle of the road. They haven't got production from guys that they usually get. Like Randy Arozarena has been terrible this year. But I think that's all I got for you tonight, there, T Dog.
All right. Hit me with that birdie or bogey so I can get a bogey.
Birdie or bogey. Over the last 15 years, can you name the three players with the most total points in March?
I've literally been trying to think about this the whole show, and I can't even in the ballpark of thinking about guys who might be in consideration.
Think of long tournament runs with really good player.
Oh, trust me, I am, and it's not going well. But let's see here. I'm going to go with Zach Edey, because he had a pretty good March this year and we got the championship game. I want to say Carson Edwards, but I'm not going to. He had 2 games over 40 points, but he only got to the lead 8. So I'm not going to say that. So I'm going to go, Zach Edey. I'm going with You know, just give me a bump. I went Brian Dent. I don't even remember who I wanted to
keep. Yeah. Well, Zach Edey is not one of them.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Kemba Walker.
Oh, wow. That was within 15 years? Wow.
Yeah. 2011. So
wow.
Same with Jimmer Fredette, which he is second. And Terrence Shannon Jr. this past year.
I should have known that one. Jeez.
Yeah. I think they were saying just the month of March. I should have clarified better.
Oh, I thought it was the tournament. My bad.
So I think it was conference tournament and regular tournament.
I thought it was just tournament. It didn't matter. It didn't. Well, Jimmer had to be conference because they never made a deep run.
Right. Right.
I would have got bogey anyways. No worries.
Thanks for watching the TNJ Man Show. Have a fantastic 4th of July, and we'll be back at her next Monday, hopefully with all 10 fingers.
So, I hope so.
We'll see you next Monday.